Look, Don't Touch, and a problem with environmental education. It was in Orion Magazine, a great publication, and he's joining me now. David, thanks for your patience.
I'm glad to be here.
I didn't mean to put you last but not least, certainly. There's just so much to talk about as we every week try to look at the most important and urgent stories of our environment. And this is just as important, this issue, and it's been going on for some time. It's not quite as dramatic as something that happens overnight, but there is this trend for kids to not get dirty, to not get down in the mud and touch and feel and smell and experience nature like we did growing up. And it's appalling when you think about in one generation what's being lost. And tell us what motivated you to write this article. I think you were observing firsthand in your own family how this is taking place.
Yeah, it's quite a remarkable transformation that's happened in the last, generation, 10 or 20 years, of the amount of contact that kids have with the natural world. And it's something that I saw happening and tried to guard against as I parented my own kids. But I've seen it more and more, and it just seems like a great sadness because it takes kids away from one of their natural sources of sustenance, which is that interaction with the natural world.
And years ago, I interviewed Richard Loeb, of course, with his seminal book, Last Tree in the Woods, Nature Deficit Disorder, that was it.
Right.
And how we're not paying attention to nature, at least in the way that really makes us love it, in terms of what we're fostering in our children. And when I talked to him, I just recollected how I, growing up, played in the creek and with the tadpoles and the frogs and lived, on a cul-de-sac that we moved in only had two houses surrounded by walnut trees. It was in Silicon Valley before it was Silicon Valley, when it was fruit and nut orchards, and how my daughter, luckily we send her to camp where she does have some interaction with nature, but all around me, I don't see kids playing out in the street anymore and even going to parks. And it happens maybe on a family vacation, maybe at camp, but, what we're losing is, the ability to fall in love. And if you don't, you don't save and you don't, fight for what you don't know and love.
Yeah, and it's there's actually nice research that's kind of emerged over the last 20 or 30 years that really does show the relationship between childhood play and adult conservation behavior or adult stewardship behavior. And there's a much stronger correlation with between natural play and adult environmental behavior than there is between some kinds of environmental education and adult environmental behavior. And so that's why I was taken to write this article, because I think a lot of, when environmental education trends towards a museum mentality of not allowing kids off the trail and not allowing kids to pick stuff up and not allowing kids to collect things, and it becomes rule bound that way, then it becomes kind of counterproductive.
So seeing nature as fragile and breakable and not touchable is counterproductive.
Exactly.
It's also, we're finding that all of the addiction to technology, of course, is stressing us out, rewiring our brains,
right,
not in a good way. And we're sitting here in front of our, computers, our phones, our iPads, laptops, and how it's causing more mental distress. And nature actually is the one free aspect of life where we can de-stress and actually is calming. There's been all kinds of research about just, hospital patients, who have a tree outside their window seem to heal faster than those who have a concrete building right there. Pretty dramatic evidence that we need Mother Nature, and we are part of nature, to really calm down and get grounded. And so it's a problem for we adults as well, not getting
right
out in nature, but yeah, raising a new generation of kids who, for whom it's foreign. And of course, we have the obesity epidemic, another real good sign that not playing has serious consequences.
Yeah, and it's there's some nice research too on the effect of outdoors time on children with attention deficit disorder. And so, nice controlled studies that show a decrease of attention deficit disorder symptoms when they've spent time outdoors as opposed to spending time watching television or spending time doing other kinds of activities, so that there's a real health benefit as well as the benefit of, establishing the kind of the foundation of future conservation values.
Mm-hmm. And before we get to some of your ideas on what we can do about this, just share an anecdote or two that you wrote about in your article with your own children.
Oh, what did I write about children?
Well, not picking the flowers, you know, that's not allowed.
And yeah, actually, some of those stories weren't actually with my own children. They were with other children that I've been with in at other places. But, you know, I've been in a lot of situations where the whole idea of picking up amphibians, you know, picking up a frog or a salamander has now become kind of forbidden because, you know, there's the danger that the oils on your hand are going to affect the breathability of the pores on the surface of the frogs. And so, you know, we can watch the frogs and salamanders, but we can't pick them up. And of course, you know, it's one of those native tendencies of being a kid to pick up frogs and salamanders. And, you know, we want to make sure that kids do it in a kind of caring and thoughtful way so they don't get hurt, but to forbid that kind of interaction is exactly what will turn them off to the natural world rather than turn them onto it.
And you're reminding me, we were at the California Academy of Sciences recently with my step-granddaughter, because I'm not quite old enough to be a grandmother, but almost, dating myself here. But it was interesting that there was one exhibit where the kids could put hands on and touch the starfish, and that was the most popular exhibit, you know, with all the glass exhibits around with all the various fish and jellyfish and exotic species. It was nice that they had at least one place where they could get their hands wet, if not dirty.
Yeah, and zoos and aquaria are recognizing that that's a necessity. So there's this wonderful movement in zoos and aquaria that realize that, oh, okay, if what we really want to do is cultivate this sense of wonder and a kind of a commitment to preservation, what we have to do is provide more and more of those kinds of opportunities. So I think I was just at the Boston Aquarium where there's a touch tank where there are also, oh boy, I think there are little sand sharks in the touch tank that you can actually touch. And it's great because, you know, we're so used to the, like, oh, sharks, danger, can't touch them. And this actually, in here, they were actually, you know, it was not only possible but encouraged.
Hmm. So what would you encourage parents to do to try to overcome it? And, of course, it's more than just each family. Things have to change institutionally as well with our schools and, you know, camps. Camps are pretty good about that, but not all kids are, you know, lucky enough to go to summer camp.
Yeah, camps are really good about it, and actually one of the things I often say kind of cavalierly is that what we should do is switch the amount of time that kids spend at camp and the amount of time kids spend at school. So we ought to have kids in camp situations 6 or 7 months of the year and school 3 months of the year. That's not going to happen. Certainly, camp is a wonderful opportunity. Actually, on this, in response to this article I just wrote in Orion, there was a 13-year-old Boy Scout who just wrote into a comment board and talked about a backpacking trip that his scout troop went on in Alaska, and he was advocating for all the opportunity for kids to encounter their wild selves, and that this was one of the most important things that had happened to him. And so all those opportunities to get kids into real encounters with the natural world, and whether that be swimming or kayaking or hiking or rock climbing or stone skipping, all that kind of stuff is valuable and important. And if you don't feel comfortable as a parent doing that, then finding programs that provide those kind of opportunities is a good strategy. And I'm particularly interested in the programs that are called nature mentoring programs that happen in a variety of places. I know there's a great program. There's a nature mentoring program in Santa Barbara and a bunch of other ones in different places in California. And they really, you know, their goal is to get kids out and exploring and making forts and tracking animals and learning how to make fires and all those kind of traditional wilderness skills. And that's in middle childhood, that's what kids want to do.
you know, we have a word, I was just thinking about child's play, you know.
Right.
Children are not playing enough, whether it's, you know, schools cutting back on recess, if
right.
not eliminating it altogether, and the kind of thing we're talking about now. There's child's play is serious business. It certainly has, you know, very serious benefits.
Exactly.
And consequences if it's not dealt with. I neglected to mention at the top of the hour that you are author of several books on educational theory and practice, and you teach that subject at Antioch University in New Hampshire. Tell us about a couple of your other books that you've written, or a couple of the titles of your books, so I can just get a sense of what you're delving into.
Sure. The couple, my two most recent books, one of them was called Childhood and Nature Design Principles for Educators, and that was an attempt to identify what some of the common current play forms are around the world, and then say, well, if kids all around the world do these things, there must be some value to them, and why don't we use them as design principles in, for education? So, for instance, kids all around the world between around 7 and 11 build forts or special places. And it's part and parcel of kind of learning the natural world, but also becoming independent in the natural world. So it serves lots of benefits. And so if, in fact, this is something that kids love doing and it's got a lot of benefits to it, why don't we use it as a design principle? So lots of classroom teachers of elementary-age kids now will, if they've got, you know, some kind of bit of green space around the school, will have their each student find a special place under a tree or in some bushes or something that are all within the vicinity of the school grounds and use that as a recurrent place for the student to go back to and do writing or journaling or solve some kind of problem. And kids and students love it. You know, they love the opportunity to have kind of some free time and quiet time amidst the bustle of, you know, 6 hours of elementary school. So that's...
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, there's been a lot of emphasis, you know, on attacking the obesity epidemic, and I was just realizing that there's been some emphasis on exercise, too, but not necessarily as much on, you know, getting outdoors to get that exercise. You know, kids... I don't know that they should go to the gym, but outdoors is always better. And I'm wondering if you know what has happened in the wake of Richard Liu's book, Nature Deficit Disorder, since you've looked into this area. You know, did that spark a movement? Is there a beginning of a reversal of this trend towards sedentariness?
Yeah, there's a wonderful a family nature club movement that's emerged, and now there are hundreds of family nature clubs that meet on a weekly or monthly basis, where it's parents and, you know, young kids that meet together and go to a state park or a natural area or something like that and go exploring. It's fairly open-ended, but it involves a lot of movement in the landscape. And so that's been a great outcome of this movement. And then lots of, you know, state parks departments have picked up on the whole children and nature movement and so are designing programs that encourage families to come to parks and families to get to a dozen different parks in the course of a month and those kinds of things. So the orientation towards the family rather than towards just kids is recognized as a really important part because you have to change the family culture of outdoor recreation.
And, of course, we're in the middle of summer, and assuming the weather is not too extreme where someone might be listening, it's a really good time of year to get out and get dirty in nature.
Exactly.
Well, any final thoughts? We just have about a minute and a half left.
Well, you asked about books, and so I'll plug my most recent
Please
book,
do.
Which is called Wild Play, Parenting Adventures in the Great Outdoors, and that's the book in which I actually did really talk a lot about my own kids and how I raised my own kids and how it changed from early childhood to middle childhood to adolescence, and how you gradually had to retreat as a parent and give your kids the opportunities to have independence in the out-of-doors.
Great. And where can people find that book? It sounds like a good one.
That's a good – any of your independent bookstores can order it. Lots of them have it, and you can get it online, and it's published by Sierra Club Press.
Thank you very much, David. I want to really applaud you for your work, a very important subject area. I've been very concerned about it and really happy to have a chance to talk about it. The article in Orion Magazine, which you can get online, is Look, Don't Touch, The Problem with Environmental Education. I want to wish you a great rest of summer. Enjoy it with your family and continue to do the great work you're doing with students in college. Very important.
Thanks a lot.
That does it for this edition of The Green Front. If you missed part of our show, you can find it on the PRN website, also on my website, which is at thegreenfront.com. I want to wish you a great green week, and we'll have more great stories for you next week, including a couple of big names we're trying to get. We'll save that till next Wednesday. Have a good one.